Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that is as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking Southern pies with Nancy McDermott. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network and you have questions about pie, feel free to give us a call at 718-497-2128. Happy spring, people. Yesterday was the first day of spring. And nothing says blooming flowers, warmer weather, and new beginnings like pie. In the studio, we have Nancy McDermott. Nancy is a food writer, cooking teacher, and author of 10 cookbooks. Her latest book, Southern Pies, A Gracious Plenty of Pie Recipes from Lemon Chest to Chocolate Pecan, is in stores now. Nancy, welcome to Hot Grease.
I'm so happy to be here.
You're happy?
Yes.
Ah, great. So, what is the one piece of equipment that is essential to pie making?
A rolling pin, except you could use a wine bottle. A big bowl to mix things up in, and a fork. One thing I think the easiest pie idea is not about how easy it is or isn't to make pie crust, but how so many old-time Southern pies are butter and sugar and eggs stirred up with a fork.
So I was preparing for the show, I was sitting reflecting and thinking about my great aunt and older folks in my family who they did not have, I don't remember, a bunch of baking tools. And their cookware was like really basic. Definitely no mixers. I don't remember any pie cutters. So what's up with all of this fancy stuff we have now, Nancy?
Well, there seems to be an inverse relationship between having more fancy stuff in the kitchen and the kitchen maybe not being used as much.
Ah.
I think we let a lot of roadblocks come in between us and doing something that is the ancient homework that people have been doing for thousands of years. And it's easy to kind of get off track. I think pies are a great place for somebody who's maybe not done a lot of home cooking to start, because it really is the everyday dessert. I mean, I love cakes. Yeah. I've written about cakes. But it really is, they've always been seasonal. They've always been inexpensive. It's something that people could just stick in the oven, cooks in 30 minutes, it's ready. And I think it just really resonates with people as a real old-time, simple, sweet, everyday treat.
So I asked all my folks on social media for questions. Pie is the thing, and I know folks have questions. One of the first questions that I got is about burnt edges. A great pie, but then the edges are really dark and the outside is fine.
It's kind of the problem of roasting a turkey or a big chicken, where for the dark meat to get done, the breast is, you know, things don't cook evenly.
Right.
The only way around that, I think in the olden days when people were using a wood stove and you put the pie in last, you know, biscuits, you'd want it to be really hot. A cake, you'd want it hot in and out. But a pie would cook sort of after the bread was done and sort of low and slow and steady. Nowadays, if you've got a really hot oven, I just use aluminum foil. I mean, you just cover it. In fact, a lot of times I will cover the pie if it's a double crust. So you've got the edges and the top, cover it at the beginning and then take it off, or be ready to put a piece of foil in over it once the edges get brown.
So you're saying basically just cut or tear some aluminum foil that fits around the pie crust.
For years, I took strips and put them together to make a circle and fit a donut. And when I started making a lot of pies this fall, when I was traveling around, and I always take pie to book signings, I said, this is so much trouble. I just put a big piece of, like a big square of foil over the top of the whole pie, and it did the same thing. And I didn't burn myself. You know, there's none of this trying to fit something on a hot pan.
Okay, so that's the answer to the question. The other question is, small New York City apartments and small places to actually roll the dough. And prep areas. Do you have any suggestions for small prep areas?
Whatever kitchen counter space that you've got where you put your dirty dishes next to the sink.
Yeah.
I mean, just cleaning that off. You really just need about the same area where you would put a laptop computer. I mean, you clean it off. You're going to want to get a circle that's probably, you know, 12 inches across max. You don't need that much space. So just whatever place is handy, clean it off, flour it up, clean it up afterwards. One tool that I love is the dough scraper.
Yeah.
I think that's just nice for, you know, clearing the decks and making it look like you never made pie there before. But it's, you don't need a whole lot of
anything. So do you suggest people put down a piece of parchment or wax paper, just go straight, bare surface, clean really well? Tossed with the little flour.
The clean surface, if you put something down, it's going to move around. I mean, it's nice because you can pick it up, yeah. But I say get used to working right on the countertop. And especially if you're starting out, I say use a lot of flour. It's not ideal. I mean, the less flour you use, the more tender it is, but you've got to be able to lift it up. So I just put down a ton of flour, and then you can always shake it off at the end. So I use flour as insurance.
In your book, Southern Pies, you have a glossary, and I want to review a few terms in the glossary. There were some that I'm like, oh, is that only a Southern thing? Oh, I thought that's everywhere. And some things I'd never heard of. First up, black walnuts.
Black walnuts they're not just Southern. I mean, they're okay. The biggest producer, the biggest company selling black walnuts all around the country now is in Missouri. It's out of St. Louis. So black walnuts are wild and all over the, you know, at one time all over the, you know, forested four season parts of the United States. I think Southerners we just have always had a great sweet tooth and love them. I mean, people gave me a big bucket of walnuts. They're a big mess to clean.
Yeah, they are.
It's hard to get into them. The original tough nut to crack, but they have an incredible flavor. And the way that I remember having them growing up was in pound cake and in fudge. But for this book, I really wanted to showcase them because I really love the flavor. And I just made a pecan pie using black walnuts.
Wow. I can't find them anywhere.
You know what? Where I live, they're in the grocery store. They're from this company called Hammons Black Walnut. Hammons.com, Hammons. And they sort of have the market cornered. They're already picked. And once in a while, I've seen somebody selling them by the side of the road outside of Asheville at a certain time of year. But it's in the grocery store where I live in North Carolina, they're down on the bottom of the nut area under the pistachios and pecans.
Okay. So,
Oleo.
I have a cousin who would say oleo, and he used it interchangeably for shortening, butter, and everything. So when I saw this, I'm like, ah.
When you see that, you know you're looking at a very old school recipe that somebody's written down. It's oleo margarine. Margarine is a shortened form of, you know, of that word, and it probably has chemical meanings, but it's like you would see pet milk, meaning evaporated milk, because that was the brand that was common. Oleo is just margarine, shortening would work, butter would work. That's the fat that you're going to use.
So was that like a manufacturer, kind of how people use the word Xerox?
Or Kleenex or something.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm sorry, it's not a manufacturer. It's Oleomargarine is was shortened to margarine. So that's the name of, you know, that's like butter.
Yeah, I always grew up saying, why is he always saying that? So when I saw it in there, and it wasn't a term that I was familiar with. Another few words in the glossary, the damson plums, never heard of them in my life.
Oh, if you look in Edna Lewis's The Gift of Southern Cooking. Taste of Country Cooking. She talks about the damson trees. It's probably a wild plum. A lot of times they're canned and they're used in preserves. And I have a damson plum pie. I don't think they were used much for fresh baking. I think they were. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the kind of thing where you would just make it into jam when it came into season. And so I've got a damson plum jam pie. That's sort of a custard, and I have a friend who lives in grew up in the North Carolina mountains, and he's going to give me a damson plum tree.
They used to
be just sort of out in the yard, and you can cultivate them. But if you see them canned in grocery stores, and they're sort of almost an olive shaped and very deep purple. But it's old school.
Yeah, I have Edna Lewis Taste of Country Cooking, and I need to look in there for that pie recipe. And I probably just assumed, dancing plums, some kind of plum, like a wild plum. Okay, great. And last but not least in the glossary, the sonker.
Sonker is another word for cobbler, and I'm glad you brought up cobbler, because I just want to say that cobbler may or may not refer to the biscuit topping that looks like a road and a whatever, but where I came from, a cobbler is just a big pie. Yeah. It's a deep dish pie made square or mm-hmm. rectangular. And a sonker is, it's very particular, it's a particular section of North Carolina. It's near Mount Airy, which was the Mayberry, Andy Griffith area, sort of Winston-Salem, the Piedmont as you go up into the mountains. And it's a 13-by-9-inch pan lined with pie crust and then filled with sweet potato, is very common, peach or apple, and then a pastry, either pastry all over the top or a lattice top. And these kinds of cobblers are really just a great big pie to serve a lot of people. The idea of putting biscuit dough on top of a pie, that's not what we call cobbler.
Yeah, I did not grow up with the biscuit dough. I grew up with the sonker, but maybe not so much. Just like a little layer of crust at the bottom, then the fruit filling, and then another layer of, not all the way on the edges, on the bottom.
That's a very old-timey thing to get more crust in. In fact, I found cobblers and pies where there's crust on the bottom, possibly up the sides, and then filling, and then a layer of crust, and then more filling, and then crust on top, which I love, because I think the crust with some of whatever the pie's goo is, that's my very favorite part. So
and it would be like a really big pan. But exactly. I never, when I read your description, I was like, oh, yeah. But I never heard the term sonker to it. So that was
completely regional. It's like this little pocket of North Carolina.
Cool. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more pie. Keep listening.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain, from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience: how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network. It ain't called on the train.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. We're chatting with Nancy McDermott, author of Southern Pies, published by Chronicle Books. After 15 years living in Southern California, she now calls Chapel Hill, North Carolina, home.
Go Tar Heels. I'm sorry.
What's up? I was, it's the March Madness, huh?
That's right. Made it into those 16. It's touch and go, but.
I don't really follow it, but I did watch Fab Five last night. So, you know, they were talking about North Carolina, NYC, and Grant Hill, whatever. So, yeah, go Tar Heels, huh? I'll be a Tar Heel for today.
Yeah, all right. We'll have you. We'll have you. Duke people are not going to like you, but it's
okay.
It's okay. It's all in good spirit.
Yes. So, my people who, we have a lot of people that listen in New York, and then we have a lot of people from Georgia and North Carolina, and you'll be surprised the number of people that are from the South that are here in New York City.
When I lived here in the 80s, I met people, particularly from North Carolina and from the South. It's just,
it's amazing.
I think there's a good fit.
So, speaking of the South, I grew up Southern Baptist, and
me too.
Yes, and I was sitting here thinking I have to ask Nancy some questions. Like a few times per month at church, we used to have bake sales all the time, and I'm like, churches really don't do that. Are there any churches still doing bake sales?
That's not so. I mean, the thing that's still going on church and food wise where I am is Wednesday night suppers.
That's
kind of come back. In fact, I belong to a church now that's sort of very lefty liberal church, and we just kind of got that going again. And
it's
great. Sometimes it's covered dish. Sometimes it's get a caterer. People just sort of figured it out. Don't go by the grocery store and bring
chicken,
a fruit tray. Yeah. Just let's figure out something to get together. Food was always part of it. I think bake sales nowadays, not to be snobbish, but you hate for somebody to go to the grocery store and buy a grocery store something to bring over to the bake sale. I'd like to see it become, let's all get together and bake the stuff, because not everybody's ready to do that. But you're always going to find a market for the goodies, and I think that's something. Churches have great big kitchens.
Yeah, I mean,
it's perfect.
I mean, I think about that is where my fondest sweet memories are from, paying 50 cents, 75 cents after Sunday school or after church for cobblers, pies, cookies, and it was homemade.
It
wasn't store-bought, but people got away from that, and that's why I was like, I have to bring that up when we're talking about Southern pies, because I think for a lot of people who really know, understand, or the taste of Southern pies, it takes them back to those things. And speaking of traditions, in recent months, I've gone to a bunch of pie contests. Have you gone to a pie contest recently?
I've not been to pie contest, but thanks to you, I went to 4 and 20 Blackbirds yesterday. Nicole gave me the tip that they're not open on Monday, and it was just magnificent.
So what did you have?
We had everything that they had. We had the salty honey.
Yeah.
We had buttermilk chess. We had oatmeal, black bottom oatmeal.
Oh, that's always out when I go.
we didn't help. They kind of kept trying to walk away. It's like, no, I know there are only three of us, but we are having all the pies. Cranberry.
Sage.
And they didn't have sage.
Oh, they didn't have the cranberry sage yesterday.
You know what? Maybe it was cranberry sage.
Okay.
I focused on the cranberry.
Okay.
And it had a lattice top.
Yeah, I think
sweet,
it has a little sage
sweet.
In it. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And they said, do you want the whipped cream? Yes.
Yes.
I want the whipped cream. Oh, an apple. There was an apple, salty caramel apple.
Yes, that's their signature. So let me ask you about your experience at 4 and 20. When you walked in, did you feel like you were in North Carolina?
No, because we're just not that hip. I thought this is the coolest place in the whole wide world.
So people who are listening, 4 and 20 Blackbirds is in Gowanus. It's in a part of Brooklyn, which is right near the Gowanus Canal. Gowanus is kind of off and popping right now. And 4 and 20 Blackbirds, they've gotten like a ton of press. They're like really popular here in Brooklyn.
Well, you can see why. They just had 5 different pies and hot cocoa, and we didn't even try the savory ones. We were, like I said,
I've never had their savory either.
But they were lovely, and they had these wonderful. It just kind of said home, and yet they can't possibly make them at home because so many people came in that they must have had dozens and dozens.
The line is always long. I hear that for Thanksgiving, for like 3 days, they had a line that was like wrapped around the building, and they were sold out by 9 o'clock.
I'm not surprised. That salty honey pie was unbelievable.
Oh, yes. Wow. So did you tell them that you had a book about Southern pies? Because I think they're from the Midwest.
Yes. I was looking at their little book. No, they were hammered. I mean, there were.
Yeah, it's always busy.
Like 25 people in line. So we got our pie and then we ate and got some to take home. And
so what are some places in North Carolina or in your travels in general that are pie shops that you would go to and get a slice of pie or purchase a whole pie?
Where we are, it's much more car culture. And so to just be a pie place or a cake place or something, it tends to be pies offered at what we call a meet and three, which would probably sort of be a Southern equivalent of a diner. And it would be a place that might be open breakfast and into lunch, and you'd get, you know, fried chicken and two vegetables and biscuits and something. And places like that are still around, and they'll still, you know, they'll have, you know, 5 or 10 vegetables, one of which is macaroni and cheese. We consider that a vegetable in the South. And they'll have, you know, a choice of pies. There's a great barbecue place in Chapel Hill called Allen and Sons. And the owner, who's a guy, makes like 10 pies and 10 cakes that are there all the time. And my friend Bill Smith, who's just been nominated for a James Beard Classic. No, he's received a Classic Restaurant Award. He does pies and cakes. He does some from his childhood. And he'll like go to cookbooks like mine and put a pie on there and put our name on the menu.
I think today, James Beard, they're doing their announcements for the Media Awards today. I don't know what time they're doing. Maybe you'll be nominated for your book.
Well, I don't know about that, but I sure hope that Bill Smith is there giving out his buttermilk chess pie.
So your book, Southern Pies, I love it. The photos are absolutely gorgeous. There are so many recipes in here that I want to try. What are some of your favorites? What would you say for folks? What do they need to try?
I'm just crazy about sweet potato pie, which you can tell I've got three. I would have had a sweet potato pie chapter, but I had to calm down. I just have three different two of the custard version and one that's a sliced sweet potato pie from Dr. George Washington Carver.
That was so...
Isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah, that is a gorgeous pie. Where did you find... He has so many recipes. I don't think anyone has, like, combined them all together, but you see a few recipes here and there.
You can Google it. You find agricultural bulletins, which he put out in the 1920s and 1930s, and he'll have probably 30 or 40 recipes. They just run one after another, and it's not pies or cakes or vegetables. It's just ways to use sweet potatoes. And I used a couple of peanut recipes in my cake book, and I was just really taken with this because it's treating sweet potatoes kind of like apples, and they're layered. It's a double crust pie, and I think that's probably something that it's labor intensive, that didn't survive, you know, going into sort of a more convenient 50s time. But I kind of followed up. I went back and looked for pies because I had been so taken with the peanut cake.
I think I'm going to try it. I saw the picture. It's actually a very gorgeous pie. Yes. I mean, and you actually can, you know, listen to some really good music and do your thin slices.
Exactly. You cook them a little bit. And, you know, one thing about cooking, I think it can be intimidating to people. People, in an old-time kitchen, people weren't by themselves cooking. I mean, it probably would have been a big family, and there, you know, even if somebody was in the kitchen cooking, people would be coming in and out, and somebody starting the fire and so forth. I think getting together to do cooking, not just eating, it's, you know, always invite people for dinner, and it's, you know, it's like a lot of people would love to be involved with it. That can kind of take the heat off something like slicing sweet potatoes.
Yes.
And then you get to eat it.
Yeah, we do cook along now. Okay, so we're going to take a short break. Keep listening, folks. We're talking pie on Hot Grease today. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee, and this program is being sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. If you love pie, you have tuned into the greatest show on earth. We have Nancy McDermott in the studio. 10 books about food, Nancy. Give us a scoop on your other titles.
Well, I'm actually pretty new at the Southern and baking game, just in terms of having been writing about food quite a long time. I'm such that I have a name. I've written a lot about Thai food. I was in the Peace Corps in Thailand years ago and did not learn to cook because I was in my 20s, and I just thought it would always be there. And I really learned to cook Thai food when I came home and wanted to eat it, and started writing and catering and teaching about Asian food. And the majority, I have 10 books. The Southern Cakes came out in 2007, and Southern Pies this past year, 2010. My other books, Real Thai, Quick and Easy Thai, are Asian food, and I thought, oh, they're so different, but I'm really always interested in home cooking and traditions and why people cook what they cook and regional differences, and that's the approach I take with Asian food is the approach I've taken with Southern sweets.
You just talked about traditions. I think you have two daughters, right?
Yes.
And how important is it for you to pass down Southern food traditions or just food traditions in general?
Well, they're at an age where it's kind of not the great interest. As I said,
they're
16 and 20. And, you know, that's not, you know, right now they're not thinking about tell me about the old ways. I'm grateful that my older sister sat my grandmother down long before I thought about it and said, tell me how you make your coconut cake. Tell me how you make your blackberry rolls, which is a blackberry sort of cobbler dumpling thing that she did. And it's not precise measurements, but she talked through it. And for her icing for coconut cake, she said, you mix the sugar and the coconut and the cornstarch and water, and you put it on the stove, and then it says, boil a while. Boil a while, boil a while. I said, that's a cooking instruction. You have to figure it out. You know, she did, but to me, it's really very freeing because this old time cooking, it wasn't about people having lessons. It was about going for it and not being a perfectionist and just kind of having an attitude of I'm doing something and I'm going to have a good result and the pleasure of it.
So speaking of boil a while, and finding great ingredients. Both of your books, or maybe your books, I have the Southern Cakes in the back, or maybe it's the Southern Pies. You list some spots to get Southern food. I mean, I have the hardest time getting grits. I usually order Anise Mill grits in bulk and split it with a friend here because they're way more expensive than a few places that have them. So some people who are listening and they don't have the Ted Brothers, the Lee Brothers cookbook. I know they do a mail order stuff. What are some of the places you highlighted?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'd start with the Lee Brothers boiled peanuts. Speaking of boiled peanuts catalog. And if you just Google the Lee Brothers, you'll find that. And they ship both, you know, ready to eat boiled peanuts, and they also ship ingredients. I know they have grits. My friend John Martin Taylor has Hoppin' John's, and he has grits ground to order. My friend Virginia Willis, whom you may know, has My Southern Pantry. That's a great one to Google. And she has just started a line of Southern ingredients after her book Bon Appetit, Y'all came out.
I think I got a sample of her pecan salt at the IACP Regional Conference.
And her grits are magnificent. You know, they've got you know, they're not solid color. They've got nubbly little bits, kind of like whole wheat bread. They are fantastic. There's Hammons, H-A-M-M-O-N-S, is the place to get order black walnuts. You can even get a black walnut cracking device if you want to have a hand at it. I recommend you buy them already cracked.
Those things are, they're hard to crack.
They are a mess. Steen's Pure Cane Syrup out of Abbeville, Louisiana. A lot of old-time pies, like chess pies, were made with sorghum, they're made with cane syrup, they're made with molasses, as well as sugar and brown sugar. It was always just something sweet to put together, and Steen's Pure Cane Syrup is a Louisiana classic syrup that people love. Tucker Pecan Company. And if you contact the Southern Foodways Alliance, SFA, southernfoodways.org, I believe, is the website. That's a place to just check in and say, where can I find sorghum? Where can I find pecans? Where can I find this? They will hook you up with
Yeah, I think John T. Edge is, he's been to Roberta's a few times. Hey, John T., next time you come, you have to come on Hot Grease. He's been on a few other shows by phone. And Joe York, who does a lot of their documentaries, has actually been on Hot Grease before. But, yeah.
Well, so, John T. is saving the best for last. That's why he's going to come to Hot Grease after all
this. See, I like your thinking, Nancy. I like your.
It's because I eat so much pie.
I like your thinking. I have to ask you about your influences, because I'm totally influenced by you. It's a beautiful story about basically, I took a picture of your book, and it was in my phone, and I do that a lot. People who I really think they're doing great work. Wow. I keep them in my phone, and I scroll through them, and I keep them on the list. So who inspires you? What women have inspired you in your culinary journey?
I'll take my grandmother, and she had a dairy farm, and I remember as a child waking up and coming down to the kitchen, and she'd cook sausage and eggs, and I didn't realize at the time she'd been up for 4 hours already, and it was, you know, the second shift. She loved to cook, and I was little at the time. I didn't really learn to cook from her, but she loved to do it. She loved to eat. She mm-hmm. loved to... I really got a spirit of the pleasure of the kitchen and the pleasure of food from her. My mother was an influence, and I say this with respect, because she did not like to cook. She didn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And so I was coming along. I wanted to play with it. She went out into the garden and said, why don't you make the dessert for bridge party? And why don't you make a casserole? She kind of let me get the cookbooks and get going and made room for me. And that, you know, that I didn't question, you know, that I needed her to show me. She kind of let me have fun with that. I think Julia Child, as I started to work on it and, you know, and want to write and want to teach and think, can I do this? She did French cooking and she was of another time and place, but she had that spirit of, this is a pleasure. Isn't this wonderful? Look at this new thing. Look at this, not a perfectionistic attitude, but a pleasure attitude. And I think in terms of writing and that approach of regional and seasonal, Edna Lewis, I think the Taste of Country Cooking, I go back to that book.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, you know, now we're all about seasonal and locavore and so forth. That's a diary of the year in food from another time that, you know, we can really kind of take that right back and, you know, sort of start thinking, what is my taste of, not country cooking, we're in Brooklyn, but what's your home? What is exactly. What's around you? How can you bring that bounty to your table?
Beautiful. Nancy, this is a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's an
honor
and a
pleasure. Coming from North Carolina to be in Brooklyn.
And I didn't bring pie, but I came up on Saturday, but next time I'll come straight up and I'll bring you some pie.
No, I need to come to North Carolina.
Oh, Nicole. Yes, roadshow.
That's what I'm saying. We need to come to North Carolina. It's easy. I mean, you know, this is Brooklyn. We can come to North Carolina.
It's like falling off a turnip.
Debbie, what's her name? Debbie Harry. We should just make a road trip and come down.
Come on down.
Yes. Thank you, Nancy, for coming to Hot Grease.
My pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for tuning in live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. You can catch me here every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To to kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Omofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Boltley of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of Be Our Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.